Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 811, titled Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part four. This is being recorded on September 21st of the year 2014. The title, of course, refers to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, which is about such a manifesto about a Nazi takeover of the U.S. following not only a program of terrorism involving weapons of mass destruction, but after the media are taken over by the descendants of the SS, who buy into the mainstream media, the opinion-forming media, and then use that to control American public opinion in a Nazi fashion. And we're going to jump right back in with analysis of the, quote, invasion, unquote, of the Ukraine by Russian forces. And bear in mind what Adolf Hitler said in Mein Kampf, or wrote in Mein Kampf, when he said, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to obtain that end. Also remember something else Hitler said. First, tame the intellectuals, then take them to the fields and hitch them to your racehorses. In witness of saying, Robert Perry from his Consortium News website of September 2nd of 2014, who is telling the big lie on Ukraine? Skipping down. And now there's the curious case of Russia's alleged, quote, invasion, unquote, of Ukraine, another alarmist claim trumpeted by the Kiev regime and echoed by NATO hardliners and the mainstream media. While I'm told that Russia did provide some light weapons to the rebels early in the struggle so that they could defend themselves and their territory, a number of Russian nationalists have also crossed the border to join the fight. The claims of an overt invasion, unquote, with tanks, artillery, and truck convoys have been backed up by scant intelligence. One former U.S. intelligence official who has examined the evidence said the intelligence to support the claims of a significant Russian invasion amounted to, quote, virtually nothing, unquote. Instead, it appears that the ethnic Russian rebels may have evolved into a more effective fighting force than many in the West thought possible. They are, after all, fighting on their home turf for their futures. I would also interject there are indications that some Ukrainian army units have either defected or have sent weapons to the rebels, and some are frankly demoralized and having to fight an all-out war against their own citizens, and those are also factors. Continuing with Perry's analysis from the September 2nd article. Concerned about the latest rush to judgment about the, quote, invasion, unquote, the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, a group of former U.S. intelligence officials and analysts, took the unusual step of sending a memo to German Chancellor Angela Merkel, warning her of a possible replay of the false claims that led to the war. Quote, you may need to know, the group wrote, that accusations of a major Russian, quote, invasion, unquote, of Ukraine appear not to be supported by reliable intelligence. Rather, the, quote, intelligence, unquote, seems to be of the same dubious, politically fixed kind used 12 years ago to justify, unquote, the U.S.-led attack on Iraq. But these doubts and concerns are not reflected in the Washington Post's editorial or other mainstream media accounts of the dangerous Ukraine crisis. And this last sentence here is critical, and it is why I have titled the most recent programs about the Ukraine, Walking the Snake in Ukraine After Serpent's Walk. Listen to what Robert Perry has written here. Indeed, Americans who rely on these powerful mainstream media news outlets for their information are as sheltered from reality as anyone living in a totalitarian society, unquote. And in an excerpt from the letter sent by Intelligence Veterans for Sanity to Angela Merkel, this also from the Consortium News website of September 1st of 2014, warning Merkel on Russian, quote, invasion intel by Intelligence Veterans for Sanity. It reads in part, skipping down, photos can be worth a thousand words. They can also deceive. We have considerable experience collecting, analyzing, and reporting on all kinds of satellite and other imagery, as well as other kinds of intelligence. Suffice it to say that the images recorded by NATO on August 28th provide a very flimsy basis on which to charge Russia with invading Ukraine. Sadly, they bear a strong resemblance to the images shown by Colin Powell at the UN on February 5th, 2003, that likewise proved nothing, skipping down. If the photos that NATO and the U.S. have released represent the best available, quote, proof, unquote, of an invasion from Russia, our suspicions increase that a major effort is underway to fortify arguments for the NATO summit to approve actions that Russia is sure to regard as provocative. Now that, I think, speaks for itself. Again, note Robert Perry's last sentence of the September 2nd post. Indeed, Americans who rely on these powerful news outlets for their information are as sheltered from reality as anyone living in a totalitarian society. Indeed, hence the title of the program, Walking the Snake in Ukraine, Part 4, derived from the Nazi Cracked Serpent's Walk. Now, I'm going to develop at greater length some information that I sort of squeezed in due to the limitations of time, and for the record, 808. Now, these very same mainstream media, and the internet in particular, I don't know what you could call that mainstream media, an awful lot of what is on the internet, is frankly freshly packaged fertilizer. However, it certainly has been disseminated. That fertilizer has been very widely spread around. And we're going to note the nature of the reconnaissance satellite photographs that we have been shown to justify information about the Russian, quote, invasion of the Ukraine. Those satellite photos are not U.S. reconnaissance satellite photos. They come from a private company called Digital Globe. That's one word, capital D-I-G-I-T-A-L, capital G-L-O-B-E. Now, this is a private company that grew in anticipation of a piece of U.S. legislation, which was enacted in George H.W. Bush's term, the last year of George H.W. Bush's term, actually in October, just a few months before he left office. This permits private companies to get into the satellite imaging business. Remember that George Herbert Walker Bush was not only, the CIA headquarters is not only named for him, but he was one of the principal figures involved with the crusade for freedom, milieu, and the Nazi element of the GOP, the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. He himself was very close to the OUNB Bandera people, whose successors have come to power in Ukraine. And as we noted, and as we are going to repeat here, that company was founded by a veteran of Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars, program. This was a controversial missile defense program, which was actually a violation of strategic arms limitation treaties with the former Soviet Union. It became known as Star Wars. Bear in mind that Ronald Reagan himself inextricably linked with the crusade for freedom, the Republican element, the Republican Nazi element from their ethnic heritage groups council. And we're going to note the derivation, the genesis, so to speak, of Digital Globe, the private company that has been providing us with these reconnaissance satellite photos. From their Wikipedia entry, Digital Globe. Worldview Imaging Corporation was founded in January of 1992 in Oakland, California, in anticipation of the 1992 Land Remote Sensing Policy Act, enacted in October of 1992, which permitted private companies to enter the satellite imaging business. Its founder was Dr. Walter Scott, who was joined by co-founder and CEO Doug Gerull, G-E-R-U-L-L, in late 1992. In 1993, the company received the first high-resolution commercial remote sensing satellite license issued under the 1992 Act. The company was initially funded with private financing from Silicon Valley sources and interested corporations in North America, Europe, and Japan. It would be interesting to note, parenthetically, who are those Silicon Valley sources and the corporations in North America, Europe, and Japan. We're going to take a look at some of the curricula vitae of some of the management structure of Digital Globe, and I think it may give us a hint. Continuing with Digital Globe's Wikipedia entry. Co-founder and CEO Dr. Walter Scott was head of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory's Brilliant Pebbles and the Brilliant Eyes project, which were part of the Strategic Defense Initiative. Doug Gerull, G-E-R-U-L-L, was the executive in charge of the Mapping Sciences Division at the Intergraph Corporation. Skipping down. In 1995, the company became Earthwatch Incorporated, merging Worldview with Ball Aerospace and Technology Corporation's remote sensing operations. In September of 2001, Earthwatch became Digital Globe. And noting a part of the curriculum vitae of Doug Gerull, the co-founder, in 1980 to 1985, the first 5 years of Reagan's administration, he worked for Carl Zeiss, that is a private German corporation that we looked at in Miscellaneous Archives Show M11, Uncle Sam and the Swastika. They were deeply involved with the cartel agreements that helped to arm Germany and limit strategic materials and production in the countries targeted for conquest or hostility by the Third Reich. In For the Record 305, we took a look at the August 1944 conference in Strasbourg in Alsace-Lorraine, at which the Zeiss Corporation, along with the Hamburg America line, one of the Bush family's Nazi-connected businesses, were cited as companies that had been very useful to Germany in the past, and the men in attendance at that meeting were given New York addresses. I would also note, as we looked at in For the Record 272, in which we noted, among other things, the easing of restrictions on key technology involved with regard to reconnaissance satellites, that a Dutch holding company that did business with the Zeiss firm was among the companies that would have access to very sensitive information about our reconnaissance satellites coming from Tinsley Laboratories. Now, we're going to take a look at the CVs of some of the other key management people with Digital Globe. We're going to start with Jeffrey R. Tarr, capital T as in Tom, A-R-R as in Roger. He is the president and CEO. And in from the website of Digital Globe, prior to Digital Globe, Jeffrey R. Tarr was president and chief operating officer of IHS. IHS is a company we're going to talk about in just a minute. It is a wholly owned subsidiary, or was at this time, of Thyssen Bornemisza industries, thereby placing it at the very core of the Bormann Capital Network, about which I talk so often. Read the book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, that is available for download for free on the Spitfire website for more background about that. For the record, shows 273 and 305 will provide more background still, along with number 370 and 435. Interestingly enough, skipping down, Jeffrey Tarr began his career with Bain and Company. Bain and Company is the parent firm of Mitt Romney's Bain Capital. Bain and Company and Bain Capital are separate legal entities, but they are very, very close. Mitt Romney left Bain and Company, started Bain Capital, and many of the people in Bain Capital are from Bain and Company. And again, the two companies are very close. So the president and chief president and chief executive officer, the CEO of Digital Globe, prior to working for that, worked for IHS and previously for Bain and Company. Tony Fraser is a senior vice president and general manager for Insight. Mr. Fraser began his career in strategic consulting at Bain and Company. So he was there in the Mitt Romney orbit, along with Jeffrey R. Tarr. Another key executive, Bert Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R, Senior Vice President for Sales and Marketing, skipping down. Bert served as VP Strategy and Analysis and Supply Chain at IHS, a global information company. At IHS, Mr. Turner led sales and business development for the Americas strategy and analysis sales teams. So note that Jeffrey R. Tarr was president and COO, chief operating officer of IHS, began his career with Bain and Company, a critical part of the Romney orbit. And note that Tony Fraser also bade the senior vice president and general manager for Insight, began his career at Bain and Company as well. Bert Turner, another senior VP, also has a background at IHS. Now, IHS is the company that is the epicenter of the peak oil doctrine. Peak oil is something that has found great favor among the environmental crowd because they believe that it will lead to a curtailment of the use of fossil fuels and development of alternative energy sources. In fact, the epicenter of peak oil is IHS, formerly Petro Consultants. And in fact, it has the opposite goal from environmental conservation. By the way, I am generally very anti-oil company. I have two thumbs down on fossil fuels. If I were an octopus, it would be eat tentacles down. But peak oil is a far right-wing and fascist doctrine that has been dressed up to appeal to the so-called progressive sector. It also, as we looked at in detail and as is linked in this description, is has been used as a justification for a Nazi-style eugenics and altogether lethal termination program involving, among other things, the euthanizing, the killing of deformed babies born with disabilities at birth. Now, bear in mind the links between IHS and Bain & Company and Digital Globe that has provided us with the satellite photos justifying the, quote, invasion, unquote, of Ukraine by Russia. Reviewing some information that we looked at in for the record, 478, 506, and 534. This is from the Scoop website from New Zealand, posted on December 24th of 2003 by Walter Contreras Shazby, S-H-E-A-S-B-Y. The coming panic over the end of oil coming to a ballot box near you. Reading and skipping down. In fact, the coalition that is pushing for a radical new energy policy is largely composed of those who stand to benefit from a revival, not a phase-out of oil and gas development. Skipping down. Support for a remedial program of oil exploration and development versus switching to research and development of alternative energy sources tends to be found among oil experts who are consultants to the industry. While accepting some of the values of the new age, they largely remain loyal to their calling as oil geologists and wildcatters, skipping down. Since the 1950s, they have been fed data on oil exploration and production by just about all the major oil companies, this is about petrol consultants, as well as by a network of about 2,000 oil industry consultants around the world. They use this data to produce reports on various matters pertinent to the oil industry, which they then sell back to the industry. This much is known, Kenneth DeFeyes, DeFeyes, writes. The loudest warnings about the predicted peak of world oil production come from petrol consultants. In a late 1998 merger, petrol consultants became IHS Energy Group, a subsidiary of Information Handling Services Group, a diversified conglomerate owned by Holland America Investment Corporation, IHS Group's immediate parent company for the Thyssen-Bornemisza Group. In the late 1920s, George Herbert Walker and his son-in-law Prescott Bush had helped the Thyssen dynasty finance its acquisitions through the Union Banking Corporation and the Holland America Trading Corporation. Until his death last year, Hans Heinrich Thyssen-Bornemisza, the nephew of the Nazi steel and coal magnate, was one of the world's richest men. I would note in that regard that Digital Globe would stand to benefit from not only a heating up of the world situation, certainly another Cold War would benefit them. I would also note that IHS is one of those companies that is something of a feedback loop for the oil industry. They take reports from the fossil fuels industry and then cook those up and feed them back to the fossil fuels industry, which then says, look, we're running out of oil and other fossil fuels. Therefore, we need to have a more aggressive policy for fracking, offshore oil drilling, etc. Note that there are enormous natural gas reserves in the Ukraine. A story from CNBC that I have accessed alleged that the Ukraine has 25% of the world's oil natural gas reserves. It appears actually it's 25% of the proven natural gas reserves of Europe, not the world. I think there is an error in the CNBC calculation. It's their bad, not mine. Although what is not clear is if the estimate also involves the potential natural gas to be derived from shale in Ukraine. And in the event, that's a small point. There is a lot of natural gas in Ukraine, and certainly IHS and other companies in the orbit of the fossil fuels business stand to benefit from putting Ukraine into the EU and having it exploited by U.S. and other Western fossil fuels companies. In this, the description for the record program number 811, there we recap a long couple of posts from the Cannon Fire website detailing Bain Capital and the many sources that helped to capitalize that, including elements associated with the Hughes Empire, the CIA, not surprisingly, the people who were bankrolling the El Salvadorian death squads in the 1980s, and also people associated with Bibi Rebozo's bank, and through that, the Borman Capital Network. Again, that is in the description for the show. We don't have time in the broadcast to read it. Recapping briefly another element, we have just observed another anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and those have been effectively obscured. There has been disinformation about the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center, etc. In fact, there is some very firm evidence linking the Bush administration and related elements to the September 11th attacks. However, it comes through the investigation of the Operation Green Quest, rare milieu, the elements targeted in those raids, and not the controlled demolition nonsense. One of the interesting things about American foreign policy is that there is solid evidence that we are continuing to back jihadists in the Caucasus and in Chechnya, as we did in Afghanistan and the Balkans. We are also backing jihadist elements and the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province in China, which also, like the Caucasus, is rich in fossil fuels. An article called The Durability of Ukrainian Fascism by Peter Lee from Strategic Culture of June 9th of 2014 talks about the development of the UNA-UNSO milieu, which basically spawned Pravi Sektor as its political wing. Pravi Sektor then elected Yuri Shukievich, S-H-U-K-H-E-V-Y-C-H, the son of Roman Shukievich, the head of the Einsatzgruppe Naftigal, or Naftigal Battalion, one of the OUNB fighting formations that liquidated the Polish and Jewish population of Lviv. And of the UNA-UNSO fighters, with apparently very good reason, the Russians have also accused UNA-UNSO fighters of participating on the anti-Russian side in Georgia and Chechnya. And skipping down again. So note, please, as we looked at in a number of programs, including, for the record, 773, we have experienced blowback from our support of jihadists in the Caucasus and Chechnya. The Boston Marathon bombing appears to have been part of that. And for the record, 381, we took a look at Saudi and Al-Taqwa milieu support for the El Haramain charity, an Islamic charity that has also been bankrolling jihadists. It appears that part of the latest blowback from the September 11th attacks and the failure to properly investigate that is our growing slippery slope of military involvement against ISIS. From ABC News of August 25th of 2014, ISIS is an incredible fighting force, special ops sources say. And we find in that, skipping down, where did ISIS learn such sophisticated military methods, shown clearly after the first shots were fired? Probably the Chechens, one of the U.S. officials said. A Chechen commander named Abu Omar al-Shashani, who officials say may have been killed in fighting near Mosul, is well known for commanding an international brigade within ISIS. Chechens have appeared within propaganda videos, including one commander who was killed on video by an artillery burst near his SUV in Syria. Earlier this year, ABC News reported on the secret history of U.S. Special Operations Forces experiences battling highly capable Chechen fighters along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border since 2001. In addition, for decades, Chechen separatists have waged asymmetric warfare against Russian forces for control of the Northern Caucasus, which also, by the way, has lots of fossil fuels. So, with our backing for the OUNB heirs in Ukraine, including UNSO, and our ongoing backing of jihadists in the Caucasus, it would appear that yet another element of blowback is the growing war against ISIS. So when you don't take care of business, business takes care of you. More about this on side two. There are excerpts of various programs that we don't have time to go into in this program in the description for the Record 811. This concludes side one of For the Record 811, Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part four, recorded on September 21st of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.